4 years ago, Disability Rights Oregon found that adults in the Oregon Prison Mental Health Unit were subjected to staff violence, isolation, and received inadequate mental health care. At that time, the Oregon Department of Corrections agreed to improve treatment for adults in custody with severe mental illness. I'm speaking with Tom Stenson, Deputy Legal Director for Disability Rights Oregon, who just released a report on the progress made by the Oregon Department of Corrections as a result of that agreement. So, Tom, let's start with 4 years ago. At that time, Disability Rights Oregon released its report, Behind the 11th Door, that revealed the treatment of adults in custody with severe mental illness. So talk about some of the conditions that Disability Rights Oregon found in the Oregon prisons at that time.
At the time that we were doing the report, at the time we went to the Behavioral Health Unit, which is a unit within the Oregon State Penitentiary in Salem, we found that there were a lot of people who were being left in their cells virtually 24 hours a day, very rarely getting out of their cells. That was the most common concern. And human beings aren't intended to spend all their time locked in a little room. And it's well accepted, widely known, that especially for somebody who starts out already having a serious mental illness, that locking them in a room for 23 or 24 hours a day for weeks or months, or in some cases years on end, is one of the worst things you can do to them. It makes their condition worse rather than better. Some psychiatrist groups have even called it a form of torture. It's a very negative practice that unfortunately is widely practiced within the United States. People are beginning to recognize how bad this is, but that was the most common factor. We found people who literally had not left their cells in months at all. Some of them hadn't gone out to take showers for months. And so what this created was the worst possible environment, not just for prisoners, but for the staff who worked with them, for the welfare of the public generally in Oregon, for the Department of Corrections and the state as a whole. This is unfortunately a common practice around the United States. As I've said, there are no advantages to it. It's a terrible way to manage this issue. And so what would happen is people who were seriously mentally ill, who were placed in these cells, they'd get worse and worse. They would have no outlet, no way to learn how to have a constructive social interaction with another human being because they were locked in a cell constantly. And for prisoners who had, for instance, delusions as part of their symptoms, being in a room by yourself, hearing only sort of weird echoey sounds from outside the cell, rather than a constructive, normal social interaction with another person, that tends to heighten and exacerbate delusions that somebody might have, that they're hearing voices, for instance. So people just get worse and worse and worse. And so the only way that they would have any interaction with the world is if they responded negatively, And so they'd have some sort of minor disciplinary issue and, the correctional officers who'd interact with them, these people were being presented as security issues, not as people who had a mental illness. There wasn't a lot of understanding about what it meant to have a mental illness among the security staff. And so they'd react very negatively to somebody, who might be calling them names or something like that. And so they had this very sort of hard-nosed security-oriented response. And that would just create this cycle where prisoners didn't get any kind of supports or treatment that they needed. Their conditions would get worse. They'd act out in some way. Security staff would crack down on them, which would continue to make this cycle worse. And that would make it even harder for them to get the supports that they need. They'd have more and more restrictions on them. It would be harder and harder to get out of their cells, or if they went out of their cells, they'd be not just shackled at the wrists, but they'd be shackled at the legs and in this sort of four-point restraint that really limits how they move around. And so it just kept creating this negative cycle that seemed to have no exit for anybody involved. It made the facility a really negative place to work for staff. It was pretty frustrating, I think, to the mental health staff who were trying to work with the prisoners. It meant that assaults, both staff on prisoners, prisoners on staff, prisoners on prisoners, were very common in all directions. So that was the status of things when we wrote that report.
Tom, it's hard to believe that you are describing the Oregon prison system only 4 years ago. These sound like conditions that would occur centuries ago. Another common practice that you found 4 years ago was traumatic cell extractions. And there were incidents of extreme self-harm.
So one of the ways that people who are in extreme psychiatric distress, who are in extreme crisis, express that is through acts of self-harm and attempts at suicide. That's a measure of really heightened psychiatric stress on somebody who has a serious mental illness, that they will attempt to harm themselves. And that was something that we saw inside the BHU, that there were people who had long histories of multiple acts of attempting to hurt themselves, whether it's by cutting themselves or hitting their head against the wall. And again, this continued to be treated mostly as a security issue when we were first doing the survey. And so the response was not to evaluate what does this person need? What kind of treatment does this person need? Why are they doing this? You know, it was treated as a security issue. And so the response that would often happen is that a number of correctional officers would suit up in full body armor for what's called a cell extraction, which is how security staff remove people from a cell when the person doesn't come out on their own. This is another thing that just created this sort of endless cycle, that a core part of this problem was that people were never allowed out of their cell. They weren't given constructive things to do. And then if the only time that somebody leaves their cell is to be sort of dragged out by heavily armored correctional officers, they're not going to have very good feelings about going out of their cell. And that was what we saw when we arrived, was that several people that we interviewed had so much anxiety about going out of their cells that they were legitimately frightened of going out of the 8x12 cell that they lived their lives in, because when they went out, they had these really negative physical interactions, and prisoners would get injured. Sometimes corrections officers would get injured. And because it continued to be treated as a security problem, it heightened the divisions between corrections officers and prisoners. It increased the sense that these prisoners are dangerous or assaultive or, you know, non-cooperative among the security staff, and heightened this really negative cycle. And we were finding that these cell extractions were happening very frequently, very violently, and that it was sort of the, for many prisoners in the behavioral health unit, it was how they interacted with correctional staff. One of the most common ways they interacted with correctional staff.
So at that time, then 4 years ago, the Oregon Department of Corrections agreed to sign a memorandum of understanding with Disability Rights Oregon or face litigation. Disability Rights Oregon has been monitoring the progress made over these last 4 years. And your report, just released, called 4 years Later, Oregon Prison Overhauls Treatment of Inmates with Serious Mental Illness, talks about some of the improvements that have been made over these last 4 years. So what improvements were made, Tom, and what do these improvements mean for adults in custody with serious mental illness and the workers at the prisons?
So there have been a lot of changes, and some of them are very tangible and physical. Some of them are more about teaching and understanding more about how things work. This is part of a national effort to eliminate the isolation of people with mental illness. And the isolation seems to be one of the core parts of this process to attack, one of the things that we most need to focus on. Obviously, we want assaultive behavior to stop, for instance, but the isolation is really a core part of this concept. And so one of the primary things we look for is to have people get out of their cells and have these sort of structured interactions to get exercise, to engage in treatment, to take classes, to model normal social interactions. That's the probably the most important thing, is for them to learn to interact with other people in a constructive way, not as somebody who's shouting at them from outside their cell, not as somebody who's dragging them out, but to understand, you know, how to interact with other people in a normal way, in a constructive way. They needed to have that opportunity to be out of their cells, to be engaged in something, you know, even if it's as simple as playing a game of cards or getting some exercise in the exercise rooms that they have. That really, really transformed the overall well-being of people. And I think the most striking result of it was that correctional officers who'd been working on this unit for, in many cases, years, who had never seen some of these prisoners interact with them in sort of a constructive way to say, hi, hello, how are you? You know, they saw prisoners who'd been locked in their cells for months at a time, who'd been really seriously ill, that the correctional officers had treated as an object of fear and security concern, that now they could have somebody come out of their cell on their own and they'd say, hi, how are you?
They saw them as individuals and human beings that had feelings and were intelligent and just had a mental illness that needed treatment.
Not just that they saw them as different people, but they saw that when they were treated humanely, they could respond like other human beings, that they were not lashing out at them, they were not screaming at them, they weren't incoherent and delusional, that they responded when they were given more freedom, and giving somebody more freedom and treating them more like a human doesn't make their behavior worse or make you more vulnerable. It actually improves life for the correctional officer as well as for the prisoner. And now, you know, what used to be a really dark, dank place to live and work, I think morale is up, not just among prisoners, obviously, but among the people who work with them, among the behavioral health staff, among the correctional officers. And people who were stuck there for months or years on end have been able to move on, have really improved their conditions. They've been able to get treatment, and their conditions have improved substantially. There's a lot more work to do still.
Tom, let's talk about the work to be done still, because your report says that there is still concern about the use of solitary confinement in the Oregon prison system. First of all, how does Disability Rights Oregon define solitary confinement?
Sometimes you'll find in other correctional systems or in Oregon that correctional systems will try and define away isolation. Isolation is when someone is confined to a cell for more than 22 hours a day. That's pretty extreme isolation. I think many people who see movies think the vast majority of prisoners spend all their time inside their cells. That's not the general experience. So people who are in general population in most correctional settings have at least part of the day when they go out into a common day room and they can have these normal social interactions. They can go out onto an open air exercise yard. The people who we're talking about experience pretty extreme isolation, and they have very little to do, very little constructive engagement with other people, very little in the way of constructive activities to do. It's a really dangerous way to treat people. Extreme isolation is bad for everyone, but it's especially bad for people with serious mental illness. It's also extremely bad for young people. It's extremely bad for people with intellectual or developmental disabilities. And yet what you will find in prisons as well as jails around Oregon is that a large number of people within those isolation units, and sometimes they're called solitary confinement, sometimes they're called administrative segregation or disciplinary segregation. There's a lot of different terms, but basically if you're not getting out of your cell for the vast majority of your day, you're in some form of isolation. We see that the people who end up in isolation are people who have mental illnesses, people who have intellectual disabilities, people who have traumatic brain injuries. And Oregon's beginning to untangle that. And our big hope is that the success we had at the behavioral health unit inside the Oregon State Penitentiary will resonate throughout the state, and that other people will benefit, as I think prisons will trend away from using isolation as their means of response to prisoners who are difficult, or prisoners who have behavioral issues, or prisoners that they don't know what to do with.
Speaking of resonating around the state, your report specifically mentions Two Rivers Correctional Institution in Umatilla, Oregon. So what exactly is the Oregon Department of Corrections doing to improve conditions in that prison? And talk about what some of the issues were at TRCI.
So we've been working on issues coming out of Two Rivers Correctional in Umatilla. At Two Rivers Correctional, there's a mental health unit, which is a little different from the behavioral health unit.
And what is the difference between the behavioral health unit and the mental health unit in the prison system?
Sure. So the behavioral health unit is not intended as a long-term place for people to be. The behavioral health unit is designed for people who are in pretty acute behavioral crisis. Ideally, the use that Oregon Corrections is putting it to is to stabilize people enough to step down to a less restrictive unit. The mental health unit at Two Rivers in Umatilla is for people who have some mental health diagnosis, who need additional care and services, and who, because of their illness, are not safe to be out in a general population unit, usually meaning that they'd be taken advantage of. I think that's the other thing that people lose sight of. In prisons, just as in the larger world, people who have mental illnesses are much more often the victims of violence and abuse than the perpetrators. So one of the functions of the mental health unit at TRCI is to house prisoners who would be too vulnerable to be in general population. So they do have a day room. They are allowed more time out into that day room, but they're still pretty isolated from the rest of the facility. And their freedoms are somewhat limited. We're trying to press DOC to work on getting people more access to services inside the mental health unit to make sure that people are being treated as people who have illnesses and not people who are security problems. And there's some danger that some people on the staff still haven't sort of internalized that message, that in fact, things will go easier and better for everybody involved if we treat somebody as a person with an illness that's addressable. We also had concern about the use of disciplinary segregation for people who are housed on the mental health unit. When we started working on the problems at TRCI, there were a lot of concerns about people going to disciplinary segregation where they got no services, they had nothing to do, they'd oftentimes remain isolated for a month or more, often for behaviors that were associated with their mental illness, including acts of self-harm. You know, people could go to disciplinary segregation for hurting themselves rather than to get treatment for somebody who's clearly having a very hard time. So we've been working with DOC to try and reduce those incidents to make sure that people are not going to disciplinary segregation for having a mental illness, essentially, or for having symptoms of a mental illness. That's a continuing effort. Some things have gotten better. Some things there still need a lot of work.
Tom, for someone who has a loved one in the prison system who has a mental illness, what can we on the outside do to help our loved one?
I think for anyone who has a loved one in prison, it is really important to one, be a social contact for them. They need that normal social interaction. You know, those calls on the phone, those visits, if you can make them. Obviously, visits are limited right now because of the coronavirus, but you know, to make sure that people have those avenues for those normal visits, they can really help ground somebody who's struggling. The second thing is to be a good advocate for your friend or loved one. If somebody suddenly changes their medication or puts them in isolation or transfers them into a unit where they're not safe, there's a good and a constructive way to be an advocate for your loved one to make sure that they don't fall through the cracks and to make sure that they get connected with resources that can help them. So I think those are the two most important things that someone who has a loved one with a mental illness in custody can do.
How has the pandemic affected a federally mandated advocacy organization such as Disability Rights Oregon? How has that affected access?
So we have had to shift our monitoring to a different route. You know, we are maintaining contact with people through letters and calls. Obviously, we can't go into the prison. So that is a challenge, and it's one we've been trying to respond to for the last almost a year now to make sure that we can still be an effective monitoring agency, given our limitations on in-person visits. It's also been an enormous challenge because some of the things we're most concerned about, like isolation, have been heightened by COVID. There's a really tough balance to strike between isolating people for quarantine purposes in a way that's going to keep them from getting sick versus isolating them in a way that's going to make their, you know, their underlying illness work. And I don't know that anybody's found a magic option, but it has been really stressful for people. It's also been really tough. You know, earlier this year, we had all the fires. There were people shifted, you know, from three different facilities around the state. And that was really stressful for people who were already isolating because of COVID. So it has just been an indescribably tough year all around. And, you know, the numbers for COVID infections are just getting worse as we speak. I think we're up to 2,500 out of about 14,000. That's a rough number. I don't have the exact numbers right at hand, but the number of people who've gotten sick is just enormous. It is very hard to maintain any kind of social distancing inside a correctional facility.
And Tom, while your report says that the Oregon Department of Corrections has made significant improvements, they still have not fully complied with the Memorandum of Understanding of 4 years ago, this agreement with Disability Rights Oregon. So have they avoided litigation? I know you'll continue to monitor the conditions in the prisons, but at what point would Disability Rights Oregon bring about litigation, especially for continued solitary confinement of people, especially people with serious mental illness?
I certainly can't comment and say, here's what will, you know, make us file a lawsuit. Almost concurrent with our memorandum of understanding, the Oregon Department of Corrections brought in a respected national organization, the Vera Institute, to do a survey of how they were treating people in isolation. And the Vera Institute strongly recommended that corrections change their policies around isolation and to completely abolish the isolation of people with serious mental illness and to create other parameters to make sure that isolation was being used sparingly and not in a way that was going to hurt the most vulnerable people or create this cycle of violence and deprivation and illness. So far, corrections has had limited progress in regarding isolation outside the behavioral health unit, which is just one unit within the Oregon State Penitentiary in Salem. There's still a lot of people who are being housed in disciplinary segregation or in other isolating settings that I think are overused, that are causing harm to prisoners, and that are not constructive or helpful for the rest of the correctional system either. And we have continually challenged corrections to incorporate those recommendations and to reduce further the problem of isolation within correctional institutions. So far, we have not had further success on that issue. We're going to continue to advocate for the elimination of isolation for people with serious mental illness and the reduction of isolation around Oregon corrections. Whether any of that would result in litigation is not something I could say.
And we must stop incarcerating people with serious mental illness, especially those whose crime as a direct result of their illness. So what is Disability Rights Oregon doing to help divert people with mental illness away from prison?
So one of our most significant initiatives is we want to eliminate the criminalization of mental illness. What we find all across the state is that there's overwhelmingly a lack of mental health resources. And so obviously people who are seriously ill, who are going untreated, the lack of treatment is going to make them worse off. So in some cases, we do see that there are obvious connections between a lack of treatment and bad outcomes for people with mental illness in the criminal justice system. But even more so, we see there are a lot of communities in Oregon where someone's not just incidentally arrested because of some product of their mental illness, but they're intentionally arrested just because they have a mental illness. There are a lot of communities in Oregon where criminal justice authorities feel there are so few resources that they rely on arresting people who are doing nothing more than being mentally ill in public. They intentionally use the criminal justice system as a way to address that. Rather than getting people the care that they need, they say, well, we don't know what else to do with that person. So just arrest them and put them in jail. So we find people all over the state who are arrested for disorderly conduct. You know, they're walking down the street and talking to themselves. And somebody will be concerned and they'll call the police because that may be the only option. You know, if they're concerned and they want a police officer to check and make sure that somebody's doing okay. Well, if you send a police officer to somebody who's having a mental health crisis or symptoms of their mental illness, that police officer doesn't have any ability to treat them. And so some police officers say, well, I'll find something to arrest them for. And it's oftentimes these petty little offenses like disorderly conduct or, you know, criminal trespass because somebody goes to a gas station because it's a warm, dry place to be and the store owners told them to leave and, you know, they don't know what else to do, or maybe they're in the middle of a crisis and they don't understand. And then they get arrested for some misdemeanor criminal trespass. We've had people who have tried to reach out for help and called 911, or they're in a crisis and they think somebody's after them and they call 911. So they get arrested and charged for misusing 911.
So what further recommendations do you have for the Oregon Department of Corrections?
Well, just as on the outside, there continues to be a security response to people experiencing mental illness. And so there needs to be a greater inquiry when somebody's charged with an offense inside the jail. Jails have their own disciplinary processes. And sometimes when somebody disobeys an order, or, you know, somebody tells somebody to go over here or go back in your cell. Obviously, for somebody who doesn't have a mental illness, they may not be obeying your order, you know, because they're willfully deciding not to do so. But for somebody who has a mental illness, who may be struggling with the symptoms of their illness, they may not obey the order because they don't understand it or because there's a lot going on in their head right now and it's hard for them to understand or obey. Or they may have some fear about going over there and doing what the officers asked them to do. And so what we've continued to see is that people who have serious mental illnesses are charged with offenses like disobeying an order, not with punching somebody in the face, but with these sort of procedural problems inside the correctional system. And so we want a greater level of inquiry in those sort of technical violations to make sure that those aren't the product of some sort of illness, and to make sure that those are not the bread and butter of disciplinary action, isolation of people in disciplinary segregation. And that's a particular area where we've struggled with corrections. There's still very strong evidence that people who are being disciplined and going to isolation, that it's because of these sort of technical violations. It's not because they punched somebody in the face. It's because they didn't obey an order, or they were disrespectful, or those are overwhelmingly statistically what we see.
And I'm speaking with Tom Stinson, Deputy Legal Director of Disability Rights Oregon. And Tom, where can people find your report?
It's behind the 11th door, and we have a series of follow-up reports on our success. You can go to droregon.org. That's our website, and you can check it out for yourself.
Again, I've been speaking with Tom Stinson, Deputy Legal Director of Disability Rights Oregon. For KBOO News, I'm Karen James.